If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I am Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, you're going to just love this show, because we're going to take a visit to Shambhala. And the show topic is primarily about acquiring reference points for your multidimensional expression. You know the mission that you're serving with all of the forces of light, with the Ashtar Command, is one that goes on 24/7 and involves your participation at levels that most people are totally unconscious of. So therefore, I'm going to be giving some very clear reference points so that you can begin your own working with yourself to discover where you place identification of your consciousness and how to make that shift that enables you to become more aware of more and more of the spectrum in which you operate as truly a multifaceted, multidimensional, omnipresent being. So let's begin with a meditation as usual. Take a deep breath. And tonight we're going to take a soul travel, a soul journey to Shambhala. And we're going to be doing it in Merkaba formation. So in your mind's eye, take the hands of your brothers and sisters, and with those of us in the Ashtar Command, the Ascended Masters, those that you love and feel close to, take their hands. Take a deep breath. With intention, visualize yourself in a huge star tetrahedron, or, if you will, just a six-pointed star. See it pulsating with energy until it takes on a life of its own and forms our vehicle of transport. It looks much like a cloud ship. You'll notice that the atoms begin to rearrange themselves to accommodate your shifting viewpoints. And this is what is termed, quote, soul travel, or awareness expansion, or dimensional translocation. In truth, you don't travel through time and space, but your intentions cause within the quantum universe the atoms to rearrange themselves to accommodate your picture of reality. So directing yourself is simply placing your intention where you would be and trust that you are where your intention is focused. So your focus of intention and mental projection is what determines your destination and your placement within the quantum universe. And this is how you work in your light body, which is another name for the Merkaba. And this is how you travel in Merkaba. So you gain your confidence in this inner plane work by simply recognizing the abilities you already possess and learning how to apply them more and more consciously. So keep your focus gently, very, this is no forcing, just very gentle placement of your focus between your eyes, between your eyelids, between your eyebrows. And immediately I'm seeing an intense violet, purple, light. And that is the spiritual traveler consciousness that is accompanying us as we take our journey. That purple light signifies perfect protection. It's what we call the inner beloved, the inner master, the master power, the way shower. Now your image engine is your imagination. That's your image engine. So when you want to transport your image, you use your imaging in factor or your imagination. And upon the inner planes, your imagination is like your rocket fuel, which gives your light body its power to lift off and travel to the far-off worlds within. You have your own universes within yourself that are formed of your own operation in the various planes of consciousness. That is called the realm of self-realization or soul awareness. And beyond that, you have the outer God realms, which are part of that which is called Paramatma, or the Absolute, which is beyond your own creation and in the great body of the all that is. So you have the inner universes and the outer universes. And so soul travel always takes place within yourself. You don't go outside of yourself. So there's never any fear that you're going to get lost or somebody's going to get in your body or anything of that nature, because you're only working in your own inner levels. And yet within takes you without, in the way of saying, you have your experiences in many, many worlds and realms without ever leaving your lounger or your bed or your chair. So the adventures that you can have when you gain the ability to create for yourself conscious awareness of your consciousness state, you can have so much fun. It doesn't matter if you're crippled in a wheelchair, if you're immobilized, if you're, you know, to where you can't do anything but sit in a chair or a bed. This is the glory of the fact that the real adventure is within. And I must say it's a lot easier, less taxing, to travel inwardly and a lot less expensive. So your inner realms, the kingdom of God that's within you, is the treasure trove and the very pearl of greatest price. That is the objective of every spiritual practice, every meditation, is simply to train you how to transfer your attention from the outer world, which is basically illusion, to the inner world. And as you move through your own illusions and you come into the realm of the soul plane, you enter the first realm of absolute pure truth. And that is where we're going to be working from tonight, in our soul body, which is very different from astral projection. When you're in your soul body, you're in your divine consciousness. So, for the ground crew, this is how you actually accomplish your major part of the mission. It's not so much what you do in the outer, although you'll all be led to be involved with humanity and in the world doing something to be of benefit, but your major work involves working in various consciousness states. And since consciousness is the only true reality, working in consciousness consciously is everything. Now we have these skills of visualization and mocking up experiences inside ourselves, and we use these skills continuously. For example, every time you order a meal or anticipate an event, you are visualizing, sensing, tasting, feeling, and experiencing inside yourself. And every one of your five senses has an inner realm application that functions in a more subtle way, but is nevertheless every bit as real. So now as we move in our Merkaba, we find ourselves approaching a large Himalayan range. And we're at approximately 17,500 feet in the Himalayan region of the high Gobi Desert. It's very stark up there. But we sense a very imposing series of rock formations that give off an aura that we can tell is something more than simply a rock formation. And the next thing we know, the Merkaba is moving right through that rock formation, as if it were simply air. And we find ourselves gently coming to light before an immense cave in the side of the mountain. And there we're greeted by a white-bearded guardian with a very high, domed forehead, very noble-looking being. And we know intuitively that he is the guardian of Shambhala, and that no one can pass into Shambhala without being called. And yet, even though you're summoned, you usually, I would say almost always, without hardly any exception, you will have to travel in your soul body, because the unprepared absolutely cannot find Shambhala. They can't approach it. They can't, dig in the ground and find it or burrow into the mountains. It is totally unapproachable to anyone that is not prepared or ready. So even though Shambhala is a very real place, it is located physically, but in the four higher subdivisions of the physical plane, which we call the etheric physical, which means it's just slightly out of the visible spectrum unless you're meant to see it. Sometimes the horses and caravans and yaks that go up near Shambhala, they will react to the energy because they sense it, but there will be nothing that the people can see. Even sometimes sounds come from Shambhala, but you can't hear them. If you don't have eyes to see and ears to hear, it can be right under your nose and you'll never see it. Also, the Gobi Desert is a shapeshifter. It's very interesting how it can transposition mounds and rocks and various things that travel through the air, seemingly, by some cosmic force that apports a formation from one place to another. It's part of that wonder and mystery that surrounds Shambhala. Shambhala is literally the capital of the earth, where the presiding lord of the earth holds the councils that govern the brotherhood of adepts that supervise humanity in its unfoldment spiritually. These are all great lords and ladies of light, many of whom you have read about in your history books that have now attained mastery or had attained mastery in those times, but disappeared back into Shambhala when their lives were over. Many times a brother has walked the earth and they've had a funeral, but if you would open the casket, you would find only three red roses, which is a symbol of a brother or a sister of Shambhala that walked our earth and seemed to die, but didn't, because these are really ascended beings, ascended masters who have immortalized their bodies. Some of them thousands of years ago, and some of them hundreds of years ago. Now, as we enter Shambhala, we are escorted, and we find that as we move into the caverns, there is a beautiful scent and a beautiful ambience. It's almost warm. It isn't dank and dark like most caves, but in fact it's illumined by piezoelectric emanations from crystals. And by a spiritual technology of light that will make its advent more and more as mankind sacrifices his tendency to want to willfully harm others. When he loses that tendency and the heart and mind become more transformed, he will actually be able to utilize the free energy called the technology of light, which is really no technology at all. It's all of light, which is birthed of the fiery and sacred heart. I'm reminded as we journey down these caverns about the great adept, Elena Petrovna Blavatsky, who at the age of 18 did a very daring thing. She got on one of those long steamer boats and went to India and went up into the Himalayas and tried to find her master because she was a disciple of the Master M. And she found her way because she was one sent from Shambhala and one summoned to Shambhala, just not in her physical body. She misunderstood that particular directive. But she actually found her way into one of the caverns that leads into the tunnels of Shambhala. And when you get in there and you're not supposed to be there physically, there are gases that are in, etheric gases in the tunnels, which cause a person to fall asleep. And then one of the brothers will come and take the person that has tried to enter the caverns out. In this case, it was the Master M, Mahatma Lemuria, who came to carry her outside and to send her back on to her home. Then, some years later, her disciple, Damodar, also tried to find Shambhala. But he also found himself met by Mahatma Lemuria on horseback, and he even sent a telegram to H.P. Blavatsky letting her know that her chela was safe and was being sent home. In fact, I've actually read the precipitated telegram, which is kept along with the Mahatma letters of Masters Moria and Kutumi in the British Library in London. And only scholars have access to these. And when we go to read them, we have to go through all of these security checks, but I was actually able to read the Mahatma letters. I read all of them and saw the precipitated telegram. When I say precipitated, the Master Moria, of course, didn't have to go into a telegraph office to send a telegram. He mentally intended the message upon an intended telegram and intended it to reach to its destination, which was the hands of H.P. Blavatsky. So that's called precipitation. And it's a skill that all of the masters have. So now, as you find yourself in this tunneling system, you will notice if you look down that your garments have changed. Note what color your robe is, because that lets you know which classes you have been attending in Shambhala. And yes, you go there regularly to take classes. Where do you think the mystery schools are that you study in? So there are two aspects of Shambhala. There's Shambhala the Greater, which is where we are now, and Shambhala the Lesser, which is in Telos. And both of them are part of the Agartian network of inner earth cities. And again, nobody can get there, and nobody can invade that area. There's about 278 cities inside the inner earth, but no one can reach them unless they're meant to. And even then, usually, you will visit in soul body. So those of you that might have had a vivid dream of being in Shambhala, or having an out-of-body experience such as I had, I was actually very, very conscious, wide awake, sitting at a dinner table. Next thing I knew, I was flying through the air and through the side of the mountain and before that guardian and started walking in the tunnels. So your meditation is actually a recapitulation of my own experience, one of several I've had. So now I'm going to take you and let you see some things which normally one would not even be allowed to speak of. But being the age of revelation, we are now able to speak of these sacred things over the airwaves of radio, of all things. And that was prophesied by the Master DK many years ago, that after the 1975, the teachings of the mystery schools would be given out over radio and the airwaves. So that's part of what we're doing tonight. I want to take you into the Hall of the Terrapths, T-E-R-A-P-H-S. And I want you to find your own tariff. What's a tariff? A tariff is a little mini you. It's a little replica. It's a little replica, like a little tiny, not tiny, but a small hologram. It's about 8 to 12 inches high. And you will find that you'll be magnetized right to your tariff. And the tariff is how your master teacher keeps track of what you're going through, because he can read your tariff and tell what each of your subtle bodies is going through emotionally, mentally, physically, etherically, spiritually. He can read your spiritual temperature, so to speak. And in that way, he can direct energy to you where you most need it and work with you to help you integrate your consciousness and become more awake and more aware and more functional in your multidimensional self. So find your tariff. And now that I've taken you here, you can ask your master teacher to take you there again, if it's for your highest good, so that you can study your tariff and gain information that you may want to have to connect your inner and your outer levels. The next place I want you to visit is the museum exhibits, where there are dioramas of past root races. Can you imagine? The root races that evolved on this planet millions of years ago. There is a replica of every root race and every major achievement that humanity has ever gone through, or great civilization, or great invention. Everything has been preserved in this museum. You can visit here for as many times as you want, and you'll never come to the end of the wonder of it all. I have spent so much time examining these dioramas and museum replications of past times and golden ages upon our Earth. Remember, we're moving into the seventh golden age. That means before this golden age, there were six other ones. And so you can visit them here and see what the people look like and see what their civilization was like. Next, I want to take you into a research library. And this is familiar to you because our classrooms are right off this large rotunda that is filled with the knowledge that so far surpasses the Alexandrian Library to make it look like a regional branch of the public library in your hometown. I mean, this one is huge. There's no end to the information that's here. But again, you can only access what you have a light quotient that is harmonized with it. You have to be in harmonic synchronization with the information that you are able to access. So everything is protected from the people who are not prepared. You will notice there's a large area that we will not be going into, because this is where the masters have their physical dwellings, and they have their astrophysical laboratories where they do all sorts of extraordinary experiments in consciousness and with substances and various things that I don't even have the words to describe. But it's like science fiction, watching what they do. And yet everything is done in consciousness because, after all, you're in a very, very remote, primitive area in a vast desert complex. So it's not like they have lots of modern conveniences. Actually, it looks like a big stone fortress, much of it, except there are beautiful gardens and beautiful orchards. In fact, actually, Shambhala is called the land of many summers or the land of eternal spring because you step out of the blazing, it's either blazing hot or freezing cold in the Gobi, you step out of that into this temperate, beautiful, spring-like environment and temperature and budding and blossoming flowers and trees and fruits and flowers. Oh, it is gorgeous. And so, you know, you can find yourself strolling with the master, because all of us have an inner plane master, an ashram that we belong to, that, again, very few people are conscious of. You move into a deep relationship with your master as time goes on until you eventually merge and blend with the aura of your master, and then you're never separated ever. You're always one with that particular master. And all of the masters work with the Master of Masters and the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, which is our most radiant one, Lord Sananda Kumara, known in your world as Jesus the Christ. So it's all one big family. There's also two groups of masters that work in the Agartian network. One are called the Wayshowers, and the others are known as the God-Eaters. And these are people who have evolved to the point that they exist on the divine prana, the name of God, the bliss that emanates from union with God. That's what feeds them and nourishes them. So they have transcended the need to eat. So let's just go before the master that has approached you this evening, and who stands by your side as your guardian, and just let him or her place their hands on your head in blessing now. It is quite okay if you're of an Eastern persuasion and wish to touch their feet in reverence. That's a common practice in India. Or you can just stand with your palms together in namaste and receive their blessings. Now we will divulge to you a secret. Your monad, your I am that I am presence, your seventh aspect, dwells in Shambhala all the time. In the Bible, where it says that we are seated in heavenly places with Christ Jesus, that is actually what they were referring to. You are seated in high places, in the councils of Shambhala, in your highest principle. This would be your divine Paramatmic Self. Sits there, even though you have a body, a little hologram running around here in the third and fourth dimensions, ascending a planetary world. You have a higher aspect that's forever in Shambhala. And tonight, if it is for your highest good, we ask that a conscious connection be established where that is appropriate and not in any way violating any previous contracts. And we ask this in the name of Jesus the Christ. Thank you. And so it is. Take another deep breath and bring yourself present, conscious and attentive, because I have information I want to share with you tonight that's going to be very helpful to you. Some of the ways that you can tell that you're working out of body with us by now should be familiar to most of you, but you probably weren't aware that it was involving your out-of-body work. For example, when you're working with extraterrestrial energy, primarily the Ashtar Command, you're going to tend to feel very sleepy. Number two, some of you have recently mentioned that you've received our energetic signature. Now, I'm not going to tell you what that is because I don't want to program you. But the one who's probably listening tonight that mentioned most recently, she was awakened by this energy signature and asked if I had ever had it. I was delighted. That's because she had received the Astra commands, kind of like when they're ringing your bell or, you know, telephoning you. They have an energy signature that they send. Anyway, you can let me know if you receive something unusual, and I can tell you whether or not that was the energy signature of the command. So you'll feel sleepy and kind of out of it. Sometimes when the inner child or basic self is running the body, it'll get a little grumpy. It'll feel just out of sorts, primarily because you, the soul, is off doing other work, and you're leaving a little kid alone to take care of the body. So sometimes you'll feel disoriented or dizzy, and your vision sometimes is very blurred when you're more on the other side than you are here. As I've said many times, sometimes I can barely see across the room. Everything is just kind of whited out. And you'll notice your vision, and the vision through either eye varies by the day. Some day you'll see real clear, and other days you'll hardly be able to see. And it varies. You know, sometimes it's one eye and then the other, and sometimes both eyes. Then another unusual thing is you'll have a sense of being very tall. When you're really expanded in your consciousness multidimensionally, it gives a sense of being like a skyscraper. Like everything you look at around you seems like very small and you're looking down on it from a great height. And then when you come closer into physical integration, you'll notice you're slam dunked in your body, and it's like the floor kind of comes up and bumps in the nose. It's a very distinct feeling of just getting very, very short, small, and then, of course, everything in your room looks huge to you. And this is simply the moving of your subtle bodies multidimensionally in and out of different levels of perspective. Then you'll often see peripheral flashes or sparks of light at the periphery of your eyes or even in front of you or often around people or around situations. And depending on the color, these signify different energies that are working with you, very often from the masters or thought forms of the masters. Then you have an increasing ability to see light around people and objects. And again, the higher colors are purple, violet, blue, gold, and white. You'll tend to see those colors when you're working in the higher divine states of consciousness. You will awaken from a very real dream experience, sometimes weeping, and you'll be clearing and transmuting something, and you can't even remember what it was usually. And you don't need to, because that's when you're in the causal plane, clearing karma or clearing things or working with people to clear. Again, in your ears, you may have a cottony, fuzzy, plugged-in sensation in one or both ears. You'll have that plugged in where you hear like a buzz in your ear, ringing. Sometimes you'll hear clicks, even Morse code, or even tones or different kinds of sound currents that pass through your consciousness. You may have tight feelings in your head or around your brow or third eye area. And sometimes when your chakras, your brow and crown chakras are opening, you may have headaches. I had an oily spot at the top of my crown chakra when it was opening. And it would be really sensitive, and I had like a bump right on my crown chakra. It was very, very sensitive. I couldn't stand anybody to put their hands near my head. I'm still like that, very sensitive head. But I had to wash just the top of my hair to get the oil out of it during the time my crown chakra was opening about 30 years ago. So you also have extreme sensitivity of your hearing and your ears and your head and your eyes. It's very, very sensitive. You'll notice varying hot spots or sensations of heat upon returning to your body. You may have missing time or missing time sequences. For example, you may be in a car driving, and you get to where you need to be or your turn off, and you can't remember for the life of you where you were, how you got from A to B. It's not there. Again, you may have goosebumps, different energies of that are running up and down your body. There may be spasmodic jerks of your kundalini as it rises and as it moves through your various nadis, your nervous system. You may have yawning or sighing or spasmodic breathing. All of these are forms of purification and integration and clearing. So, and your moods may fluctuate. There's all sorts of different things that happen as you begin to integrate that releases certain moods and certain, they're called bhavs in India. This is a divine state. Your mind may become very agitated and activated. It's called monkey mind. But it's also the effect of the light of the soul coming down into the mental body and clearing it of all the junk. And so basically it's a good idea to have a mantra that you chant. And don't worry about that because it's just God making room for more of himself in you. You may feel agitated and restless and antsy and want to do something but don't have any directive of what to do. There's so many things that you can go through as you process the various energies and integrate more and more of your multidimensional self. You may find whole blocks of your third-dimensional memory and past storylines just vanish. This is a good thing because who needs to remember the past? So almost every day someone will email or write to me and say, I wish I could remember my experiences of being on this ship with Ashtar. Or I wish I could remember who I am and which planet I'm from. And I wish I could remember my past lives. But what you're really asking is, how can I acquire a more conscious awareness of myself and what I'm doing at other than my physical levels? So I'm going to give you a few very simple reference points for your being multidimensional. And one of them is this. You will have many different points of view at the same time about the very same issue or situation. Sometimes it makes you crazy because you'll have exactly the same equal and opposing attitudes about the same thing at the same time, and you don't know which to go with because life looks very differently depending upon where you've parked your consciousness. And your interpretation will be very unique to that particular area that you're parked in. But if you're operating on the full palette of multidimensional awareness and you haven't quite gotten your ducks lined up of how to work that, it's going to just make you feel like you're very indecisive because you can see too much and there's too much information and too many options all available at the same time. So here are a couple examples I think we can all relate to. Here's a common experience that we've all had, and it's this. Someone does something that most would find offensive or hurtful. Your physical reaction is discomfort, pain. Your basic self, your inner child reaction, I don't like you. Stop it. Leave me alone. Your conscious self reaction, why did you do that? And your high self simply sees the opportunity for more understanding and forgiveness. Can you relate? Now, on an emotional level, you're going to be feeling, you hurt me, or I'm so sad, I'm so mad, I'm so depressed, whatever. One of those things is going to be there, right? Emotional. Mental, you might say, I don't understand why you did that. Explain yourself. You need to get a life. Your approach to me is not working. I think you need a therapist. It's the things that go through our mental body. On the causal level, which is your imaginative level, you will say probably something like, we must have some karma from the past to work out, because that's the level of the causal where we do that. On the etheric level, which is your unconscious, you just hold steady and trust it. It's all going to work out just fine. Now, on the soul level, the soul realizes it's only a play of consciousness and energy. And so you just remain kicked back, neutral, and you just watch the show and you observe everything without reacting. Your soul is always impersonal, loving, and accepting. And yeah, you can be loving and accepting and impersonal. That's truly being loving and accepting. On a spiritual level, that's the paramatmic level, you will see only God, and nothing causes any ripple of separative perception. So you see how very differently each level can interpret and react or respond to the same single event. And all of that took place in your own levels of awareness. Isn't that amazing? Another common experience that we've all had, let's say you have to walk through a dark area of town late at night alone. Okay, here are your different levels. Physically, you try not to draw any attention to yourself. Your basic self feels cautious and senses there may be bad people out there who could hurt us. Your conscious self will be thinking, well, I have my whistle around my neck, I have my pepper spray, so I hope I'll make it home safely. Your high self will be thinking, you are never given anything you can't handle, so there's nothing to fear. Your emotions may be saying and feeling tremendously afraid you're going to be attacked and full of fear. Your causal level, you imagine every shadow is something or someone waiting to leap out and get you. And your mental body, I can't believe I'm doing something so stupid. What was I thinking? And then your etheric level walks on steadily, trusting. Your soul walks in such love with the beloved that there is no awareness of any threat or danger at all. And your spiritual level sees no others to fear, but is only aware of one divine beingness as all that exists. So now you have a couple examples of how many states of consciousness can be operating through you in response to any single event. So self-realization means getting all of those levels transcended into the soul so that you can walk with the beloved in such love that there is no awareness of anything but the face of the beloved. that's what we're doing when we're trying to integrate our consciousness and become more centered and balanced and aware. We're really trying to just be the soul all the time and not go into these other levels and let them run us. You will use those levels, but in divine ways that always stay conscious and aware of who and what you really are eternally. And that's really the focus of every one of our shows tonight. Now, all of these states of awareness are part of you as a multidimensional being. So let's move this whole process now to gaining some reference points about the inner plane event. Let's say that you are physically in bed at night. So physically, you are sound asleep, and so there's no sensations in your body. Your basic self is with your body. Basic self hangs out around the solar plexus area. That's where it lives. That's your body L for your body elemental. And it's busy keeping your body breathing and your biological and vital signs functioning. That's its job, keep you alive. Your conscious self is completely unaware because it's asleep. And your high self is like the silent watcher. It's just the witness. It's just present. Your emotional level or astral body is the one that's having a very vivid series of dreams. Sometimes you remember them, sometimes you don't. If they're really outrageous and vivid. Usually you'll wake up and remember. Otherwise, you just go from dream to dream to dream. And these are just emotional release patterns for the most part that play back to you. Illusory experiences in the astral realm would seem real enough at the time, but like the physical plane, they're totally illusion. But nevertheless, sometimes you have some really good dreams. I'm not talking about conscious soul experiences here. I'm talking about dreams. Then you have the causal level, which is where your karma, the seeds of your karma, is stored. So usually at the causal level, you're working out unresolved issues from the present or past life scenarios. Sometimes when you're working out things on the causal plane, you'll find yourself waking up weeping. You know, the pillow's wet and your face is wet. You've really been crying, but you can't remember why. That's when you're working out unresolved issues in your causal body. Then your mental body is always learning and receiving inner teachings and storing it in the subconscious mind so that the learning, you're going through mystery school teachings and initiations, all sorts of stuff. Sometimes you dream that you're actually in class or you're actually teaching. I have many, many experiences where I'm out-of-body teaching. Of course, with me, it's probably the soul level. But mental level experiences on the inner planes are usually very mental, very busy. You're doing a lot of thinking. Sometimes if you're in tax season, you'll be working out the mathematics of your taxes in the mental plane. So most of us are familiar with that. Then the etheric is unconsciously registering symbolic and archetypal impressions. This is an unconscious level that just registers the symbols and the archetypal things, which later come out in unconscious patternings. And the soul is awake and aware. That's the part of you that's always awake, always aware, and ever-expanding in radiant bliss and total freedom. And the soul is always involved in loving and serving. That's what it does all the time. So those dreams in which you're quite conscious and you're out and you're helping people and healing and serving and teaching and working as an intercessor and doing all sorts of things, you're in your soul body. At the spiritual level, you are one with all that is. You are the absolute, the Satchitananda, the being, awareness, and bliss. So on all the levels, with the exception of the highest spiritual level, you are a co-worker with God. Well, let's say all of the levels up to the soul plane, you are a co-worker with God. At the soul plane, you become working in God. And at the spiritual levels, you work as God. So there's a very definite shift as you integrate and become more self-realized and then move from your own inner universes out into the greater God realms and become God-realized itself. So now you can readily see how you could interpret your physical and your inner plane experiences from very different perspectives, depending upon which level you are most closely identified with. So again, as an example, people who are primarily identified with their physical bodies will tend to rely only on what they can actually see and touch. And that alone is real to them. They will tend to doubt anything of a more subtle, non-physical level. So that's where you find the masses of humanity today. It's, well, I'll see it, or I'll believe it when I see it. But actually, in spirit, you see it when you do believe it, and not a minute before. That's why you can have two people. There's a spaceship out there, but one can see it and the other can't. That's because one of them has made that okay to see the spaceship, and the other one says, nope, spaceships don't exist. So it could land right in front of their nose and they wouldn't see it. So those who are mostly involved in their basic self levels will be very self-conscious. You know, it's all about me and getting my physical and emotional needs met. These people just really can't see anything that they don't relate it to themselves personally. They're the ones that are always getting offended, getting their feelings hurt, taking taking things personally, taking things out of context. You know, they're all a big walking around emotional bundle of complexity. That's the basic self level. It's like a little 4 or 5 year old child. The conscious self is primarily a combination of the physical and basic self levels. And the conscious self usually is thinking about, you know, what's in it for me? Is it pleasurable? Is it fun? You know, they're involved with the astral and the causal, which are your desires, your ambitions, your attractions, your attachments. And more developed people will be moving into the mental intellectual self. But these are ones that have done some work on themselves. They will have some rational, practical, logical, inquisitive, opinionated, and various mindsets and belief systems that govern their choices and evaluations. But they'll also be full of judgments and prejudices. So a very intellectual mental self is not the best self to be operating out of. Then your etheric is unconscious. These are your unconscious impulses that cause one to do addictive behaviors, repetitive patterns, and act without conscious direction, out of old subconscious ingrained tendencies and programming. So we don't want to do that either. But the soul is awareness itself, ever loving, ever understanding, intuitive, centered, selfless, pure, joyous, knowing. And its primary characteristic is service. In fact, you can tell a person who is in integration with their soul because they're all about selfless service. And one who has become merged with the Supreme, they are in that divine being, which you can only describe as the isness, which is fullness itself. They're one with all that is. And their function is one of simply being that which is. Just by being present and giving their darshan, they awaken other people who are still in the sleeping states of consciousness. So therefore, we're all multidimensional and in process of practicing the ways that we can operate upon more and more levels with more and more conscious self-direction and awareness. So once you've established your reference points for your particular awareness levels, you can then start practicing noticing which level you tend to function from most often, and then begin to make a conscious shift to the next higher level. Begin to consciously move your inner awareness to where you'd rather be. Make it a conscious decision and a conscious choice. And pretty soon you will know how to function in more and more ways that are conscious and deliberate and with full awareness and eventually mastery. So eventually you'll be quite skilled at placing your awareness through intention wherever you wish to be at will. And who is the you that does this? The eternal you, sometimes called the soul or the I Am Presence. And that you is free. Free to be in any one or all of the above-mentioned states, and yet still be free, remaining objective, simply observing, neutral, non-reactive, and that is termed soul awareness, or spiritual liberation, or self-realization. It's being in the world, but not of the world. So then you've become a Jiva Mukta, a person that is free, yet still operates in the world in unconditional loving service to all life. And that is our objective. And it's there as soon as you want to do it and turn your awareness to it in your intention, you can begin to do it more and more with expertise. Just a matter of training your awareness. So, let's take a deep breath and go out chanting Hue. Hue. Now clench your fist to bring yourself back into your body. Drink a little water if you have to move about or drive. And tell yourself that you're completely integrated according to your highest rate and highest good. And God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you next week. Baruch Hashem Adonai. Blessed is the name of the Lord. Amen.
While the economy might be scary, the future is actually